Awesome. Good morning, everybody. Are you all here for the Office 365 session? Okay, awesome. If you were in my session yesterday, you already know that joke. So, welcome. I am Lonnie Bauer. I'm from Microsoft, and I'm here today to talk to you about mission-critical hybrid scenarios in the latest release of SQL Server 2016. How many were in the session yesterday that I did? Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. Thanks for coming back. So today what we're going to cover in the hybrid scenarios, and I hope you don't mind, I was planning on coming here with nothing but PowerPoint slides, but I actually want to demo things for you, so I hope you don't mind if I move over and demo a lot of things. So I'm going to cover what's new in Mission Critical. I'm also going to talk about the always-on enhancements, as well as Stretch Database. How many people are familiar with Stretch Database? How many are using it? How many have tried to implement it? Oh, that's fantastic. We're going to do that today. How many people are familiar with the ability to do backups to Azure? How many are doing it? Oh, we're going to do that too. This is fun. How about data files in Azure? How many of you know that you can do that in SQL 16? One hand. So that's an awesome new feature. We're going to do that as well. And I'm going to show you really cool things that you can do if you're leveraging Azure for the data files. We're going to go through here. If you saw Dandy's session on Tuesday morning, he went through a lot of these things. So I'm going to just briefly cover them and talk about the mission critical deployment options that are available with SQL 16. For those of you who don't know, we've recently released Windows Server 2016, so a combination between Windows Server 2016 and SQL Server 2016. If you've got no domain, it's no problem. We now have support for workgroup and non-domain joined clusters. For those of you who are using Always On for your availability groups, we've increased the amount of automatic failover partners or replicas. We now have 3, and we've also increased the number of secondaries to 8. Another great feature in the hybrid space is the ability to have your always-on availability groups on-prem in your data center, and then to have an Azure VM replica. So we now support the ability to, Dandy had a much prettier slide of this, but it was the ability to have your replicas and then have one in Azure. So if you did have a true DR scenario where you lost your data center or data centers, you would be able to flip over to the Azure replica. In terms of always-on enhancements, the standard edition of SQL Server 16 now allows you to have a basic availability group. We also have support for group managed service accounts. So for those of you who are in organizations that prefer to use group managed service accounts, we support that now. There's also database level failover, and I'll move over here so I can make sure I see everybody. Database level failover, so this allows you to, in your always on availability group, do a per database level health check. And if there are issues that would cause the database to go offline, you would have a failover where previously it would not. We've also introduced support for DTC. So I know that was a big ask for quite some time, the distributed transaction coordinator to go through and always on. And round robin load balancing for the readable secondaries. So that was an ask. So right now you can do, you can have readable secondaries and you can create a read-only routing list, but in SQL 16, you can now do round-robin load balancing for those. So I mentioned the auto failover target increase. There's support now, so in Management Studio, if you had an encrypted database and you were going through the always-on availability group wizard, you could not add an encrypted database to an always-on group, and now, in the new version, it does have support for that. So I mentioned the load balancing of the replicas. If you download this deck, I put a lot of code samples in here so that it makes it easier for you so you don't have to go and search for them. But what we've done is the parentheses around server 1 and server 2 create that as the load balance pair. And right now there's only one set of nested parentheses supported. So for your read-only routing list, if you're familiar with the code for that, you normally wouldn't have that set of parentheses, but that puts server 1 and server 2 as load balanced. And then other mission critical enhancements, and this goes over to the window side. Rolling cluster operating system upgrade support. So if you've got previous versions of Windows and you want to upgrade, we now support the ability to do a rolling cluster upgrade, which is really great. You don't have to, you know, previously if you were upgrading your cluster, you would pretty much go to new hardware or evict everything and leave yourself in a one node state, which isn't optimal. So now we support this. I mentioned the basic HA and standard edition. There are some limitations for that. It's just one database in an availability group. There's no readable secondary, you can only have two replicas. So you could do it with the basic availability group, and so you wouldn't be able to do backups off the secondary, so you'd have to go to the primary for that. But it does allow you to leverage standard edition to have always on. We also now support site-aware failover clusters. You can set a preference, so if you've got multiple buildings, you've got a multi-subnet cluster, and you've got your preferred or primary building, you can now set a preference of a location, and they will do failovers. It will fail over to your preferred building before going over to the other building, and a lot of people have been asking for that, and we now support that. Now to the fun stuff. So stretch database. I think this is a fantastic feature. It allows you to store cold data in Azure. The best part about it is you don't need to make any changes to your queries or your applications. It's done through SQL Server, it's done through the system. The system knows that you've got the database stretched. It allows you to reduce your on-prem database maintenance time. So what happens is if you've got, let's say you've got, we'll use something easy, 1 terabyte of data, and you know that 90% of that is cold, not going to be updated. You also know that 90% of that is not read very often. However, for some reason, you have to keep that data. You can use Stretch to push that data to Azure, and it doesn't copy it, it actually moves it over to Azure, to a Stretch database. Then when you run your queries, if you're hitting the data that's there, it would come back. You would incur a charge for bringing that data back. It would be normal data transfer rates. But in terms of doing backups and everything else, on your on-prem machine, you're then only backing up the data that is on-prem. Stretch database, just like the Azure SQL database, has the three replicas, so it has the same characteristics. So you have your redundancy built in. You can also pause and resume, and we're going to do that here in a demo in a moment. So if you're stretching your data and you're saying, oh, you know, all of my transactions from, you know, 2016 prior to 2016 should be stretched, you can pause that and the data would remain on-prem. That data would remain in Azure, and then you can just resume it. And as far as the limitations, if any of you in the room have tables with more than 1,023 columns, that wouldn't be supported. And I have seen customers with tables with more than this many columns. We also don't yet support memory optimized tables for Stretch. If it's cold data, there's really no need to have it in memory. We don't support CLR at this time. And check and default constraints, as well as computed columns. So how many want to see me stretch a database? A couple people, okay, let's do it. Can you all see that in the back? Excellent. So there's a number of ways you can do that. So I've got here the latest sample database. It's Wide World Importers. And I'll just show you that we do have some data here. So I happen to know that this is one of the tables we will be stretching. So there's 961 rows there. You can see here that everything else looks normal about this database. I am going to... open up a query. So what we're going to do here is we are going to go to tasks and then stretch. And we are going to enable stretch on the database. Using this wizard, it will automatically evaluate all of the tables that can possibly be stretched out to Azure. And something to note, I know that there are other cloud offerings and you have a choice. This is a feature that is only available in Azure. So this has gone through, it's looked at all of our tables, and you can see here anything that that is bold here can be stretched. So I'm going to choose the People Archive. I don't want to stretch the entire table. What I do want to stretch is, I want to stretch the people, the users who are not permitted to log on. So in our rows, we are going to choose rows, and we're going to send this to People Archive stretched. We're going to choose is permitted to log on equals 0. We're going to do a check for this. So that looks successful. I'm going to go ahead and say next. Oh, done. This will be the only thing we'll stretch. We're going to say next. It's going to ask you to sign into Azure. So it won't let you just go to any database. So for those of you who were not in the session yesterday, for those of you who were, I apologize in advance for repeating my joke, two tables walk into a bar, one table says to the other, may I join you? Yeah. My family doesn't think it's funny. So I'm going to choose my subscription that I want to use for this. I'm going to go to Australia East because I don't want to put this in the US. I want it to be closer to where we are. I'm going to choose an existing server. Oh, I think I deleted it. Okay, we'll make a new server. Using Dandy's password. And here, so it's detecting that we don't have a database master key. So this will automatically do this to make sure that we are secure for this. So I'm going to go ahead and enter this. And I'm just going to use the source public address. And this says to me, okay, this is what you're going to do. This is what you're going to move over. Where are you going to move? I'm going to go ahead and say finish. And this is going to start going. Did I go too fast for you to take a picture of that? Okay. So here, now if I go to, let's see if I refresh this. It's It's going to take a moment. So the icon for your database will change, indicating to you at glance, you won't have to look at anything. You'll be able to see in the icon that it's a stretched database. So just wait for that to go through. So while this is going, I'm going to go back to the demo. I'm just going to show you some code examples, and then we'll come back over here. So right now, it's provisioning the server, creating the rules. Let's refresh this one more time. I'll probably get a timeout. Okay, so I'm going to come back over here. So I know, I don't know what the split will be in the room between those that like to use Management Studio and those who like to code everything. I came from a previous location, my previous role, we automated everything, so we were rarely in Management Studio. So I want to go through and show you the code examples. So here, you first need to enable the instance. So by enabling the instance, you can then go through and do the databases, and that's just setting an SP configure option for remote data archive. To configure a database, you would create the master encryption key, and then go ahead and do the database scoped credential, and you could see in the alter database statement, you're setting remote data archive to on, and you're giving it the server as well as the credential that you created previously. If you wanted to stretch a table and not use the wizard, you could go through and do an alter table command, and you would set the remote data archive to on for that table, and then you'll see that that migration state equal outbound is saying push the data out to Azure. I mentioned that you can pause and resume the stretch. So the migration state, you can change that from paused. You could go from outbound to paused and then back from paused to outbound by doing an alter table and set remote data archive and the migration state. So that will allow you to pause and resume. And this could be for a number of reasons depending on what your environment and your workload required, whether you were doing maintenance or anything like that. So we're actually going to do this. So we're going to disable it. So there's two things you can do when you disable stretch. You can either orphan the data, maybe not orphan it, you can abandon the data or you can keep it. If you want to keep the data, you would need to you'd need to set your migration state to inbound, and that will bring the data back in from Azure. And one thing to note is once you run this, it cannot be canceled. And another thing to note is once you run this, your stretch database is still going to exist in Azure. And so if you're not going to use that, my recommendation is to go out there and delete that. And then here we have the abandoning data. Some people may choose to abandon data. You would do the remote data archive. You would say off without data recovery and change your migration state to paused. And again, this can't be canceled either. And I would also note to clean up the stretch database that you still have in Azure. And then just like when we went through and enabled it, we set remote data archive to on. You want to set remote data archive to off. And again, all of these commands you're running, even if I do this through the wizard, it does not clean up the database that's in Azure. So if you're done using it, go ahead and go through and delete it. So I'm going to come back here. We can see that this was successful. And you can now see, so I'm going to close this. That was my timeout that I thought we were going to hit. You can now see that this icon has changed for the database. Can you all see that? Okay, wonderful. Now I'm going to run this query. Actually, first let me show you this. If I go to stretch and monitor, the resolution has it hard to see all of this for you. I apologize. You can see here who I'm logged in as. You can see where it's going. You can see the service tier, where it's located, the database source, and you can see here that the eligible rows, 961, and it tells you how many rows there are in Azure. So now I'm going to go ahead and take this query. So I ran it before. Oh, I didn't run it before. So I ran the query before without the filter. Yeah, so I can comment this out and run this. So I've changed nothing else about the query. And you see here I've got 961 rows. If I change, so we know that where is permitted to log on equals zero is in Azure. If I run this query, I now get, there's no index on that, I'm pretty sure. So 167 rows. So if we put an index on that, it may return quicker. So now let's disable it and bring the data back. Let's see. So we're going to take People Archive. We're going to say migration state is inbound. And then we're going to change the table. We're going to disable stretch on the table and disable stretch on the database. What did I do here? Didn't want me to run them together. So now if I refresh this, we could see we're back to a regular database. If I come back over to, that errored out because we were no longer being stretched. If I come back to the People Archive stretched query, I can execute this and I have 167 rows. They're all in the server. So that's about it to it. I can show you the portal. Got a lot of stuff here. So here's our logical server for the stretch database. So you would just go in like I'm going to do right now and just say delete because I'm done with this. Very long name. It's also irreversible. Okay, so we're done with that and we've cleaned that up. Is there any questions about this? Yes. This is going to an Azure SQL. You're not allowed to stretch to from on-prem to on-prem.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Once you have disabled the database, once you've disabled stretch in Azure and you've got your data sitting up there, is it possible to, from within Azure itself, export that those tables with BTS or the database itself that's been orphaned? Like if your on-prem data changes?
Sure. Oh, so I'm going to answer two things. So I don't know the answer to once you've orphaned it. I would have to test that. I don't know that off the top of my head. But that made me think of something that I asked previously and was asked of me is, what if I want to make schema changes to the table? If you want to make schema changes to the table and you've got data stretched, you would need to bring all the data back to make the change. So pretty much the data that's out there is read-only. You don't update that data. And if you need to make schema changes, you would have to bring it back in order to do it. You wouldn't be able to just make the change. So if you tried to make a schema change thinking, that data, you know, it'll be fine. It will error out because the system knows that it's stretched, and you'll get an error that says this is part of a stretched database. You can't make schema changes. Does that help? If you come to me after, I'll follow up with you. I'll get the info for you. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. If it's running a query that's not based off of your filter, yes, it will go read that data to see if it's valid to bring back, yes. So my recommendation, if you are stretching data, is not to stretch data you will be reading all the time, because the goal really is for companies who have some requirement that they have to keep the data, yet it's not being used. And if you got terabytes of data on a server, you don't want it sitting on storage that you're paying for, very fast storage that you're paying for, so you could throw it out to Azure and still have the ability to read it when needed, and then you would no longer need to back it up on-prem because it's out in Azure. Yep. Yeah, you can't update the data that's out there. So moving on to, yes? I do not believe so. Dandy, do you know that offhand? Temporal tables and for stretch? I don't think so. Because it's read-only data out there. So moving to backups and to Azure. The great thing about this is it's going to an Azure storage account, and it gives you the same options as you would have. So you could have the local redundant storage, or you could choose geo-redundant storage. Your redundancy is built in, so just as any other Azure storage account, you've got multiple copies built in, and that's managed by Microsoft, so you don't have to worry about having a copy of the data that you've got out there. One of the best things about this is if you are responsible for managing systems and managing backups and figuring out where to put them, you no longer have to provision and manage storage for backups. And in some companies, that's where a good chunk of the storage allocation goes to for servers is backing up data, especially if you've got certain retention requirements that have you doing certain number of fulls and differentials, your backup lot becomes very large. And sometimes if cleanup jobs don't run, you end up with months and months of backups, and then your backup drives become full. Going through to Azure, for the Azure storage, it is very secure, and in some cases, it could be more secure than a standard SAN where the system could have it open. The drives, you know, could be provisioned. If you were to pull drives out of, if you had a single drive, I don't think a lot of companies are doing this anymore, but if you had a single physical drive that backups were going to, if someone pulled that drive out of the server, they'd all have all the backups, so this would not be allowed to happen this way. And then you no longer have to go through, I don't know what the company of choices out here. In the US, it's Iron Mountain. Many companies have Iron Mountain show up and pick up tapes and then drive them off site. And then if you need to do a restore, you have to call Iron Mountain and say, I need tape 1, 2, 3, 4. They bring it back. And then you have to go through and restore from tape to be able to do a restore. And one of my favorite features, and we will do this, is the ability to stripe your backups is supported. So if you are concerned about security, even though we've got record number of security certifications in Azure, you can have multiple storage accounts, create credentials, a shared access to stripe your backups. So just like you would do on-prem if you're striping your backups and saying, you know, backup database 1 to multiple files, you can do that to Azure and to different storage accounts. And then the only limitations to backing up to Azure storage would be the file limit. So I believe right now it would be a 1 terabyte. So if you had a backup, if you had a backup file that was larger than 1 terabyte, you would need to stripe it, and then you would be able to do it that way. So let's go back to our server here. I want to show you the storage accounts. So I've got Ignite New Zealand backups. And in order to do the backups to Azure, you need to have a container to write to. And I just want to show you here that we've got no containers. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back over to our server. No, we're not going to Internet Explorer. Come back over to our server. And I'm also going to show you here. Sorry about that. If we look at credentials, we've got nothing there. So if I expand this, nothing's listed there. So we want to create a credential to be able to store data in Azure. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the Azure Shared Key file, and I'll go through this relatively quickly with you. This is code that you can find on MSDN. You can just copy this and go through and make changes as needed. So here I've got, this is my subscription name. I'm going to have to sign in. I'd like the data to go to Australia Southeast. I'm going to use my Ignite New Zealand backups storage account. I'm going to create a container that's called SQL Backups. And it's going to go through using the Azure PowerShell commandlets, and it's going to go into my subscription, and it is going to create the container for me, and then it's going to spit out a shared access key for me. So we want to go to... So we'll run this. And I've got another one that goes to a different container so I could show you the striping. So it's going to ask me to log in. Let me do that again. So I'm going to sign into my Azure account. I thought that would have been cached. So I've authenticated. It'll go through. If I didn't have, so I commented one of the lines out where it would have created a storage account, but I've already got the storage account. I needed to create the container for me. So I'm going to get a, here the resource group already exists. Do you want to update it? And I do, because that's going to create the container for me. So it's going into my Ignite New Zealand. And you can see here that it succeeded. And I want to take this SQL, and I want to run this. So this is creating a credential. It's saying to go to my storage account there, blob core Windows Net, and then the SQL backups that we just created with a shared access signature and the secret that was spit out for me. So that ran successfully. Now if I go to credentials, we will see now that this instance has the ability to write to this storage account. I'm going to open the second one as well, or I'm going to run the second one. Bless you. So run that. So this is where if you wanted to go to a different storage account, you could do that. You would just enter that in the script here. And you would get the credential created for that other account. And in this case, I'm going to a different container. So same storage account, just a different container. It's going to ask me again if I want to make the change, and I do. So I'm going to say yes. So here we go. And then it's going to give me the credential for that as well. And copied too much, but that's okay. I wish the word wrap didn't do that like that. So here we've got SQL backups too. I'm gonna go ahead and execute this. I'm gonna close this. And if we look at our credentials, if we refresh this, we've now got two. If I jump over to the portal and refresh my subscription here, we see that we've got two containers. So now I'm gonna go back over to the server and I'm going to open up my script to back up to Azure. So here we're gonna back up the database. So in this one, we're backing up Wide World Importers and I'm backing it up to SQL Backups. And I'm gonna head and run that. So you can see it's pretty fast. Now I'm going to open up the striping one. So this is going to do the same backup that we just ran, only I'm going to send it to two different files in two different containers. So you can see I'm going to SQL Backups and SQL Backups 2. So I'm gonna go ahead and run that. So that finished in 4 seconds. I think it's something like 100 and something megabytes per second. Yeah, 126 per second. If I switch over to the Azure portal and I go into SQL Backups, we'll then see the first backup that we created and then half of the other backup we created. If I jump over to SQL Backups 2, here's this backup. So then if you had another server that you wanted to restore from, as long as you had the ability to read from that, you would be able to do that without moving data around and having to find storage on that server to be able to locate that backup file. So are there any questions on this? Yes?
Are we able to make use of the encryption
mechanism? Yes. Yes. So this is just the text or the code that I just ran for the backups. So you would put your storage account name. You would just need to make sure that you have the credential created and then the container name that you chose and the container name that matches the credential that you created. Okay, this is my favorite thing. So I'm gonna move over to the data files in Azure. So this, one might ask, why in the world would I put my data files in Azure? It simplifies hardware moves and migrations for you as one reason. So if you were changing hardware, you didn't want any downtime, you could have the data files in Azure, and as long as you have the rights to read that container, you can just attach from the other machine. Your redundancy is built in, so it's in a storage blob. You've got storage blob. You've got multiple replicas of that. Storage in Azure is cheap, as opposed to storing files and buying hardware and SANs. It's low maintenance. We maintain that for you, all of the storage. It removes the need for capacity planning in terms of, oh, this is going to grow to, you know, 5, 10 terabytes. You can use the Azure storage, and as long as you're within the limitations of single file or however your storage account is, it's almost endless in what you can do. This is my favorite thing I'm going to show you. I have a lot of favorite things here. So nearly instantaneous backups via snapshot backup. And I'm gonna show you what we can do with that. And when I first saw it happened, it kind of blew my mind, because if you're in this room and you've got developers or other teammates who are saying, oh, I need a copy of this data, how long is it gonna take you? Sometimes you have to find a machine to restore it to. Sometimes you have to find storage. Oh, I only have, 100 gigs left and that database is 2 terabytes. I have no idea, I have to go to the networking team or the system team and say, oh, I need more storage for this. And sometimes there's a long delay in that, and sometimes there's a lot of signatures or other workflows that you have to go through to be able to do that. And we're going to take a snapshot of data. I'm going to show you what we can do and how quickly we can do it. So we already saw we only have SQL backups and SQL backups 2. I'm going to go back to the server here. I'm going to close all of these. And come back over to our PowerShell friend here. And we're also going to need a credential for this. I don't want to store my data files in the same container as my backups. And if I were doing this, I really wouldn't want to store my data files in the same, I probably wouldn't want to store them in the same storage account. But for purposes of this demo, it's going to be in the same storage account. So here, we are going to create, I'm going to get the shared access key. I'm going to do two containers here. So this is the same thing that I ran prior, but here I'm going to create a data container. So here is the, sorry about that, data container right there. I'm going to go ahead and run this. Again, it asks me to log in. I should have used Dandy's storage account for this so I can throw all of this in. He's smiling. Do you want another joke? It's another repeat. Two tables and a query walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "What a nice view I've got here." I'm here for another 20 minutes. Okay, so yes, I want to make the change. I don't have any more data jokes. So I'm going to create this credential now. And this one came out pretty nice. So we've got data here. I'm going to execute that. I'm going to close this to hide the signature. Go back here. And I'm going to do the same thing for data shared key 2. And if you're itching to leave, bear with me just for a couple more minutes because this is very cool. Oh. Oh, I think, let's see. Okay, data 2. Maybe because I didn't uncomment something for that. So we'll just verify that we have the container, and then I'll worry about that later. So new query. So shared access signature for data 2 container. That worked. Let's just verify that we've got two containers, data and data 2. So we've got data and data 2. We've created our credentials. Now I'm going to open up my script to create a database. So now I've got create database, new database in Azure Storage, because I'm pretty boring and I couldn't think of a better name. I'm going to throw the data file to new data or new DB, MDF, and that's in my data container, and the log, new DB log, in my data container. I'm going to go ahead and execute that. And I've got a database running in Azure. So if we refresh databases, we now see new DB in Azure Storage. I'm going to go to properties here. I'm going to look at the files, and you can see here that our path points to the storage account that we just created. Pretty cool, huh? Yes?
How do you mitigate or handle transient faults in this scenario?
In terms of connectivity? Well, I mean, it's still going to run how SQL Engine runs. So I would imagine that you would hit, if you were going to hit them, you would hit them when you were either doing a checkpoint or reading from a physical page. So most of your workload would probably, I mean, if you look at page life expectancy, most of your data is probably already in the buffer pool. Right, and so all of your transactions are running against buffer pool memory, and then when we checkpoint, it's going to write to disk. Otherwise, I would, you know, I've not heard of people having many issues with it. I would say have retry logic in your apps, just like you would any other way if you were going to a SAN over fiber or iSCSI. So we have a blank database. I just want to put data in here so that it makes this next part a little more interesting. So I'm just going to import some data. I don't want to make you sit here and wait to import everything. So we'll just import from our sample database. And I'll just choose a couple of tables. It really doesn't matter. I'm just putting some kind of data in there. This should work. Let's grab some more data because that doesn't seem like much. Do we have time? Actually, let's just so I make sure I get you out on time. So now we've got NewDB and Azure storage, 80 megabytes, that's not bad. We can see here, if we go into data, we've got our data files there. And let's just pretend they're 75 gigs or 750 gigs, because that'll make this more fun. And in data two, we've got nothing. So now what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go back over to the server. I'm going to come back over to PowerShell. And I'm going to open up this snapshot blob. So here I'm going to the same storage account. I used my storage account key to get into this. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to snapshot those blobs, take a snapshot of them. I'm going to run this. So I just took a snapshot of those files. Now I'm going to copy. Oh, let me open that so you can see what I'm doing here. I'm going to copy the snapshot from data to data two for both the MDF. So the MDF is going to be new DB2 MDF and the log. Because I was lazy, I just recreated or copied and pasted. The log is now going to be new DB2 log, and that's going to go over to data 2. So copy snapshot of blobs. That's done. Very quick. Now if I go into data 2 and I refresh, I've got those files. And imagine, this is gigs and gigs of data, and I did it that fast. Now I'm going to go back to the server. I didn't have to find storage. I didn't have to go to a sysadmin. I didn't have to provision data on a SAN. And it was at the point in time of production that we were thinking, oh, no, something terrible happened. Let's look at the data immediately. You know, if anything happens, you want to understand what went wrong. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to open up my create database from with my new files. So this is create new DB and Azure storage 2. So if I'm on a test server that has no storage whatsoever, but I need to do this, and I have the credential created to be able to allow me to get into this storage container, I want to rebuild the log because, you know, I don't really feel comfortable trying to attach the log knowing that I just took a snapshot like that. There may be some kind of issue in terms of a transaction. So all I care about is that data. So I'm going to go ahead and run this. And now I've got a copy. And if I didn't sit up here and ramble on while I was talking to you, I could have done it much quicker and I would have a copy of production just like that. So if we look at our databases now and refresh, I've got a copy of production instantaneously. I think that's so cool. I'm excited. If I were still responsible for production systems, I would be doing this right now. I think it's really awesome. So I'm gonna come back over here. And I gave you code to be able to do this. So you just keep in mind you need to have the shared access key created with the credential to be able to go through this. Let me go back. So we've gone through, talked about some of the new hybrid functionality, but really I wanted to come here to show you what you could do. We were able to stretch a database. We were able to do backups to Azure as well as striping backups to Azure and then putting data files in Azure, which again I think is extremely cool. And the ability to be able to snapshot it and then have another database as a copy of that, it is phenomenal in my opinion. Here are some resources for you. So earlier in the session, I made you some nice links there for you, easy to get to. I talked about the workgroup and the non-domain join clusters. So that's a Microsoft article about the Windows Server 2016 clusters and how you can create a non-domain join cluster. As well as I gave you an article for the rolling operating system upgrades and all the stuff that I just did in terms of the data files in Azure. There's also a tutorial, so I gave you that as well. I'll wait a second before. Okay, I hear snapshots. And then in terms of sessions, moving from this point forward here at Ignite, here are some other SQL Server sessions. I have one more tomorrow morning if you feel like going through another session with me. I'm just going to talk about the enhancements in Management Studio, specifically around 16 and the ability to do some cool things even if you're hitting older version instances. But the boom compelling visualizations with SQL Server sounds pretty cool. So I know you have a choice when you come here. There's lots of sessions going on at the same time, so thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you were all here. I hope you got some useful information.